Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Corbin.
Shut up, Corbin.
I was like, and I'm Corbin.
True story.
Shut up, Corbin.
Actually, what happened? It was the best.
I laughed until I was lightheaded.
It was the best.
Yeah.
It actually made my entire weekend.
And I eventually tell Rich that you were not, in fact, me.
I got lightheaded. I nearly passed out. Well, if you recognize me from my voice, I think you can differentiate my voice from yours probably fairly easily.
Not really. You guys sound very homogeneous.
That story was really funny, and I'm glad you told it, and it's cool.
Well, the real point of...
The point is, our listeners agree with our Shut Up Corbin mentality.
Yeah, and the listeners actually want a Shut Up Corbin t-shirt. What the
that
hell?
Is what they want.
Hold up. What the hell is that? Oh, all right.
Is that Ryan trying to talk?
No.
That's Corbin trying to talk.
Oh, my God.
God damn it, Corbin. Really? Do you need to adjust the rabbit ears on your fucking computer?
We should leave this stuff in the cast, because this is, like, people will understand more why we rag on Corbin.
Dang, the signal's getting all messed up from this tornado.
So welcome to Brainstorm Brewery, episode number 48, I mean 49, 50, right?
49, I think,
It is not 50.
50 is a milestone. We'll be there soon. We're going to have to do something special. Oh, yeah, we got spoilers for the number 50. That's good.
Yeah, that'll be exciting. Sure. We should have the full set by next week.
Yeah, that'll really mix it up because we have spoilers tonight for number 49.
Yeah, but next week we'll have all the spoilers.
I don't know. I hope it gets better.
I'm with you. There's been a couple individually cool cards, but overall, yeah.
Future individually cool cards, like, eh.
Yeah.
Nothing's really stood out to me.
Maybe that's just the traitor in you guys, because these cards look cool. This is exactly what I was waiting for.
You're such a player, Marcel.
I mean, I guess, but, like, there's not even a ton. Like, there's, like, three or four cards that I look at now and say, oh, these are going to be good in standard. And, like, even that is pushing it.
Everything I like, I don't think there's a lot of financial opportunity. I think the Clue Stones are amazing. I really like the Clue Stones a lot. And those are going to be worth approximately nothing, except in foil. But everyone's going to know that. So it's not like you can snap cheap foils. The other thing I like is Putrefy. I'm glad that's in the set, but again, printed five times, so there's really no financial opportunity there either. I haven't really seen a lot of the rares that I'm necessarily, you know, excited about being in the set. So there's going to be financial opportunity, and I think a lot of those big six mana dirtles we're going to take another look at. And if the format slows down, I think those are going to enter play a lot more than we're seeing with big expensive guys with Innistrad creatures running around. I'm thinking, if things slow down, I think some of these guild champions are really going to get there.
I'm not sure how it would slow anything down, though. Even if this set's slow, it's not going to do anything, but this is unlikely to slow down standard.
Well, I think that's, I think I'd heard that from Wizard's End that the set should slow things down a little bit.
They were referring to limited.
Yeah.
Completely. Well, we still have all the RTR stuff, all the Gruul stuff, all the Rakdos stuff, but I think if Control gets a few more good cards, that's really all we need.
So do we want to get rid of the spoilers? Do we want to do, like, Pick of the Week and try not to do Picks of the Week of the new set like we did last week?
Sure, let's jump into Picks of the Week.
Yeah.
I'll start so you guys don't steal my Pick of the Week.
Okay.
And then I'm going to take a Pick of the Week from somebody else and use it as mine. Arthur Halavitz. He recommended Whispering Madness because the card works good with this recently spoiled
Thief of Notions?
Yeah, Thief of Notions.
Okay, let's talk about what Thief of Notions is, because this is a card that Ryan and I got wrong for approximately 2 hours today.
Yeah, this is a card, and you guys were poo-pooing, and then you, like, missed the most important, almost the most important piece of text.
No, it was the most important.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Well, I mean, if it just had Flash, would it be a card?
Contextually, it's the most important.
Yeah. Okay, can we, does anybody have it pulled up?
Yeah, I gotcha. Thief of Notions, it is one, or two colorless, one blue, one black, a 3/1 creature with Flash. It's actually, it is Notion Thief, not Thief of Notions. We keep saying that wrong. Anyways, it's a 4-mana, 3/1 with Flash. If an opponent would draw a card except for the first one, he or she draws in each of his or her draw steps. Instead, that player skips that draw and you draw a card.
Basically, this is a Sphinx's Revelation, this hoser, along with potentially Jace and Brainstorm. Hosers.
I mean, even if you ran this out for value at the end of your turn four when they tried to flashback and think twice or something like that, that's a two card swing in your favor is legitimate, especially if they're expending resources to get
and,
that draw.
And it comes with a 3/1 body. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I saw that one toughness is a real liability. Okay. So, Corbin and Marcel on Twitter today were talking about this card and, Ryan and I were sort of like, really? Because I kind of think this card is hot garbage. And we thought it was just a guy that you Jimmy Jam out there and he's a really bad Nevermore with one toughness. But the fact that, you know, they put that Sphinx's Revelation on the stack and you play this guy in response actually gets there. Otherwise, he would just be a dude out there that kind of says, okay, you can't play Sphinx's Revelation until you find a way to kill a one toughness creature. Oh, Tragic Slip? Yeah, that's pretty good.
But now people still will have that Tragic Slip there. They'll just do one less on the Sphinx's Revelation. You cast this.
I mean, sure, but like then they have to. It creates a lot more tension, especially in those mirrors. You know, you can't just blind. You have to think. You can't just blindly Sphinx's Revelation for infinite at the end of the turn. You know, you have to. It's another thing to consider. And with the mana as it is, like a lot of decks can play this. Like Jun could splash to play this and to have another card against. Against control, you know. That said, I don't know necessarily if that's this is the way decks want to go or not.
Four color aggro makes me sad.
I think he's really good against loot effects, actually. Not that there are a lot of loot effects, but if someone played Is It Charmed and tried to draw two and discard two, you'd really pull their pants down with this.
Yeah,
which is what Ryan was saying, like playing it in response to a Brainstorm in Legacy or Vintage could actually be really powerful.
Yeah, because then they got to put their two cards. You get their three cards, and then they got to put two cards in their hand.
You draw three, they put two back. You're good. Oh. You're pull their pants down.
Wow, that is that would end the game, and it is blue.
It is blue.
It will see play in Legacy likely. I mean, it's a 3/1 body, which isn't irrelevant, and it can have a game changing effect.
So today is Tuesday. The pre-orders started at 3 this morning, and they're 10 at the close of business today. So I don't know what it's going to look like on Friday when this airs, but it's really getting there.
Yeah, it's getting there. And so it's getting there.
3 today? Is that where it started at?
I believe so.
Well, I was at work. I saw this card spoiled on Twitter, and I tweeted that I was very interested to see what it pre-ordered at because, you know, it seems like the kind of thing that's going to get a lot of hype and could see a spike. You know, if it becomes a piece and, you know, a standard deck very quickly after the release, to a lesser extent, like, Boros Reckoner did. And the legacy applications are even bigger, but unfortunately, I probably would have bought in at 3, but apparently now it's 10.
Wow, this is quite a crazy tangent. Didn't we start talking about this card so we could do Marcel's pick of the week?
Yeah.
Like an hour and a half ago.
All right, Marcel, give us your pick of the week.
So the pick of the week through Arthur Halavis is Whispering Madness. And this card, if you guys don't know, is from Gatecrash. I was actually looking at this card to pick them up a while ago, and I just completely forgot about buying them before. Now they're bulk. They're completely bulk. On Modo, you get them for 5 cents. I heard he bought a bunch of them for like a quarter. And basically, it's, you know, for 2 mana and a blue-black, it's a sorcery with Cypher. And each player discards his or her hand and then draws cards equal to the greatest number of cards player discarded this way.
That seems good.
You're just taking all the cards and just giving them nothing. So that's insane.
Yeah,
Art's actually got a pretty diverse portfolio. Like if you're following Art on Twitter, and you should, I think he's at A Halavay? Good luck figuring out how to spell Halavay. H-A-L-A-V-A-I-S? That sounds right. We'll have it in the show notes. How about that?
There you go.
I wrote about Art for Who to Follow because I think he's good value to follow on Twitter. So he was talking about an actual raft of cards, anywhere from Reforged the Soul, because that's a Wheel of Fortune type effect, or Winds of Change maybe. He also said, what's that, Atlas?
Otherworldly Atlas.
The one from Avacyn Restored where you can put charge counters on it and then make each player draw cards equal to the number of charge counters on it. That could obviously be quite good if you're the only one drawing. So there's a lot of potential for stuff like to go up. So there are quite a few specs you could get in on, and they're all still pretty cheap.
Those all seem super cheap, and I especially like the ones that are easy. Like, I don't like Otherworldly Atlas, that takes a while or whatever. Like, Whispering Madness is obviously insane, because you just make them discard their hand and then, like, that pretty much ends the game. And you can flash it in at their turn and then do that. I also like Reforge the Soul, which I believe, not looking at the card, is 5 mana. Yeah. And you can go turn into their turn 4, flash it in, turn 5, Reforge the Soul. They don't have a hand anymore. You know, that seems the most powerful way to abuse this card. Financially, now that it's at $10, I don't know how much opportunity there is.
Yeah. So I think the opportunity is going to be in the other stuff that goes up as a result.
Yep.
Like, the opportunity wasn't to pick up Viscopa Guildmage. The opportunity was to go get your Exquisite Bloods.
Yeah, exactly. So Reforged Soul seems very good cheap, and Whispering Madness as well in that case.
You know what's really funny about this? Whispering Madness made Invisible Stalker go up, but it itself never really got anywhere. And now another card is in turn making Whispering Madness go up. So I think that's kind of cute and kind of funny. Maybe you want to play Invisible Stalker in that deck already. And on top of the Notion Thief, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take my pick of the week is to Sphinx's Revelation is to move it. If this card's going to have an impact, because there's these, when it first came out, you know, the first thing I thought was, oh, this hoses Sphinx's Revelation. Now we get talking about more, and you think it's almost a combo deck, you know, and that the combo is you make them discard their hand. So with all that said, if that's going to be a deck or even be around the format at all as a deck on its own, then once you factor in the fact that this also does just host the Sphinx's Revelation, it's a lot of things that maybe keep the Sphinx's Revelation decks from taking over. I mean, don't forget there's still, you know, Skullcrack and all these other things that were supposed to hurt it. So I think maybe not get rid of them right now. If this starts to impact the format, then probably move them before the prices start falling.
Yeah, I got rid of mine on Moto. Last week they were $47 at the high. And I should have sold them then. I just blinked and I work. And now they dropped down to 35, so I sold them at like 33. But I expect them to drop a little bit more. I think they'll probably hit 20 before they bottom out. People will run on mass sale.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I would buy them back because they're still going to be a player in the format. They're not going to be completely eliminated, but they're just going to be neutered. It's no longer going to be the card of the cards.
Right. Okay, so who wants to go next?
I'll go next. I'm a little more looking into Legacy this week. And one of the pickups that I was working on at the SCG this past weekend was Shardless Agent. And the reason for this pick is, it really started seeing a lot more Legacy play lately. It's been doing pretty well. Jason, you just wrote your article about this. How well did it do this past weekend? Was there some copies in top 16?
Yeah, there was several copies in the top 16.
And I mean, this is
off the top of my head. Don't do that to me.
Fair.
You kidding me?
Sure. Okay. Well, point being.
Are you kidding me right now? I don't do that to you.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I'm over it. Let's be friends.
Okay, we're friends. Point being, like Scavenging Ooze, this starts seeing Legacy play. Unlike Scavenging Ooze, it is a 2 of in the deck that you can get it in. However, that doesn't mean this can't be a $25 card because the decks that are playing it aren't just running a 1 of. I could see it going as high as 40 at some point if it never gets reprinted again, but I think for now, you're looking at kind of turning 15 into 25, which is still not bad.
Do you think there's a lot of upside? Because I know it was when the Shardless deck first came out in Legacy, it went from 6 to 15 or whatever. Do you think there's still some upside at that price?
I absolutely think so because I swear this card was 20-ish at some point.
I think so, but it dropped back down. I mean, some websites you can find it as cheap. I think on eBay you can find it as cheap as 12. And
it seems like I don't think it's getting more play now.
I think it really is. I think it has kind of had a resurgence. It wasn't seeing a lot of play for quite a while.
I feel like it was like 2 or 3 in the top 16 pretty consistently. I'm like, Jerry T is really champion this deck hard because it does a lot of things that Jerry T likes to do in Legacy, like pick bug colors and cascade into Ancestral Visions. But I really feel like this isn't getting more play, and I'm not sure what the price spike has to do with, other than maybe like Jerry T writing about it on SCG and some of those readers buying in.
Well, I mean, it really hasn't spiked, though. That's what I'm saying. I think it's going to go up.
You think it'll go above 20?
I think it'll be 25. It's 15 right now. That's at the high end. You can find them as cheap as 10 or 12. And I think that as much legacy play as it's seeing, like, there's no reason that card shouldn't be more.
You can't really lose at 10 or 12. I personally got them at 10 by virtue of buying the pre-con they were in at 20 whenever I found them for months and stocked up on those. So
yeah, I've still got a couple of sealed myself.
Yep. So definitely. I don't know that necessarily it would get a reprint, and if it stays around 25, I think they're fine with that because, you know, it makes people more inclined to buy future Plane Chase decks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Suppose I have to go, don't I?
No, you don't. You don't
okay, good. I've got him off the hook. Something curious happened. Anytime there's a real big disconnect between the foil price and the non-foil price, that almost exclusively happens on Eternal playable cards or EDH playable cards. But anytime there's a huge disconnect, you gotta watch the movements of either prices because foil Deathrite Shaman went down along with the price of non-foil Deathrite Shaman. But a card went up this week and the non-foil hasn't moved. So in case you hadn't noticed, last week on eBay, no, Abrupt Decay did double, and I'm really glad that I picked them up at 20 now that they're 35 to 40. But what I'm talking about is Thalia. Last week, Thalia was around 15 for the foil, and I sold mine for 15 on eBay, and I noticed that they were bought by Ben Blywise, so I thought, that seems odd. I went to Star City. They're selling them for 25, but right, they're still selling the non-foil for like 5, so I think non-foil Thalia is poised to go up.
And for those of you who don't know, Ben is the lead buyer at Star City, so his actions in the marketplace mean a great deal if you're reading ahead into things.
Right. If Ben is buying something from you on eBay, it is because your sale price is now Star City's buy price or close to it. So SCG's buy list is practically 15 on foil Thalia right now. They've priced at 25, and I don't think it'll go down. I've been saying for a while that I thought Thalia was a really good pickup just because all the legacy play it could get. It's a great hate bear. I mean, Goblins was splashing white for a while just to play the stupid thing. But I didn't consider that the foils would quite outpace the growth of the non-foils as much as they have. But I think there's an opportunity in the non-foils. You can get those as cheap as $4 retail. I don't see this not being a $10 card, especially if it's a $25-plus dollar foil.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is tied very much to the success of Maverick at the Legacy Open last week, a deck that, you know, a lot of people thought was dead. So I think that's...
Maybe not Maverick at the Legacy Open. I'm thinking more of the fact that there were two copies of, they're calling it Team Rocket, but it's actually the mono white pure Death and Taxes deck that was at the the GP in Strasbourg.
Well, in that case, it's both because the Maverick deck was also at the GP, so I guess it's just a lot of different decks running Thalia.
Right, at the GP there was a four color Maverick deck, which, you know, I didn't hate it. It's still a Punishing Grove deck, and I think that's where you want to be right now in Legacy. So Thalia gets played in a lot of things. So I think $4 on the non-foil is criminal. And if you can still get the foils for around 15, you probably have a few more days to try that.
All right. So now speaking of Legacy and rising prices, one of the other things that happened this week was that Star City raised their buy list price on Jace the Mind Sculptor to $100. And that caused the medium price on the card to spike from just over 100 to 140-ish. Star City is up to 150 retail on that. And then Force of Will later in the week did the same thing and went up. Is this something you guys think is a real thing? Is this a legacy bubble, or are these prices going to come back down?
No. I think these prices are pretty much, yeah. I mean, like, anytime Legacy's been happening lately, it just seems like prices keep going up and we don't really ever have a decline.
Legacy is going to get more and more popular, especially on Moto. They're going to start releasing some vintage cards, and you're going to see spiking some Legacy cards. I got into my Jaces and my Force of Wills myself so I could play. So I bought some play set as a player. But yeah, I think these cards are going to go up, and I think this Legacy is just going to get more and more popular as much as they want hate, because Modern can't be Legacy. It's no longer the same.
It's true. I really wish they would print a little more support it, because, I mean, they've said now that they're actively trying to deter people from playing Legacy, I guess, but they're not printing cards with Legacy in mind.
I mean, does this change I agree with you guys. I don't think I think the prices are real. And the growth in Magic is, over the last year, 6 months. I mean, really, and if you go back for the last 3 years, it's just huge. I mean, so every time a new player joins, there is some percentage chance that player is a person who has enough money to buy into Legacy and wants to play it. So as long as we have these people, like, I don't see these prices going anywhere.
And you know,
I don't know what Ryan was going to say before I interrupted him. But
I was going to say, I don't know that it's necessarily has anything to do with the money, because I've got a friend who, I mean, he makes enough money to be able to like spend on some hobby, but he's really getting into Legacy very slow. And I think that's the way to do it. It's just like pick up all your staples and stuff like that. And he just sold a bunch of standard cards and is looking and started picking up dual lands and stuff for them.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like if a player who buys Jace's to play in Legacy is extremely unlikely to get rid of those, because once you get into Legacy, you're into Legacy, kind of the end there.
Right. There's no reason to get out.
Right. So, like, it just takes copies off the market every time. And as long as people are joining, there's a chance they're going to be a new person who wants to get the remaining Jaces. It just keeps pushing the prices up. And I don't think it's likely to go down. I think the prices are more or less here to stay.
I think there's something that needs to be addressed. And that is this prevailing myth that Legacy is too expensive to buy into. And what people are doing is they're citing $150 Jaces and $100 Force of Wills. I think those cards go in decks that aren't necessarily super accessible to people who are new to Legacy. I don't think you want to be jamming Jaces and Force of Wills necessarily if it's your first Legacy tournament. What's wrong with going out and spending $30 on a Red Deck Wins deck that would, you know, it's going to punish some inconsistent... Well, if you have, like, the expensive stuff's been printed a few times, like Chain Lightning is in that Fire and Lightning deck. Like, it's not 30, but it's not 3,000 either. It's probably between 100 and 200 bucks for a decent Red Deck Wins build, and that's if, you know, you're running 20 basic mountains. I think you can build a Legacy deck that does okay and lets you play in Legacy tournaments and get a feel for the format and pick the stuff up a little slower. I just think it's really funny that I see these standard players that are like, I don't want to spend $2,000 to get into Legacy, but they'll spend $500 on standard every 3 months. I think you can get into Legacy you don't have to buy a playset of Force of Wills and a playset of Jaces and a playset of Wastelands and all that expensive stuff. You don't need four modes to play Legacy. There are cheaper decks. There are cheaper decks that are winning, you know, that top 8, top 16 consistently. And it doesn't cost $1 million. You would probably spend to build your one Legacy deck that you could play forever if you wanted to. You'd spend probably what you spent on 6 months to a year of standard.
Yeah,
I don't buy that whole nobody can access Legacy argument.
I mean, and I do think, like, this doesn't change my opinion that Legacy in the very long term, there's a limit to how much it can grow based on the amount of dual lands out there, basically, and the other staples. There's definitely a limit to it, but that doesn't mean that it's dead or that the prices are going to tank now overnight. Like, it's a very long-term problem. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think there's a bubble here. I think these are real prices. This isn't Star City manipulating the market. This is actual demand. You know, they're buying Jaces at $100 because they were selling Jaces every Sunday at $100 or more.
And why would Star City price the Legacy out of existence or try to profiteer on Legacy if they're not even supporting it that much as a format? They're not doing every Sunday as a Legacy event now. So if, you know, they're not the only ones making money on Legacy. There's no real incentive for them to make the prices go up. Okay. If they can't even see the rationale for having a Legacy tournament every week. I don't really buy it. As much as, you know, I'd like to say Star City's the villain here, I don't see that at all.
Yeah, I mean, people like to hate on Star City, but almost every single time something like this happens, they just need to sell the cards. I mean, they have opens every week that you have to have those cards to sell to your customers, and they do what they have to do to keep them in stock.
I think they raised their buy list because they needed to.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the fact that now you have foil Jaces that are pretty much the same price as Power?
I think it's fine. I just moved one this past week, and I was very pleased that I, by procrastinating 3 weeks, it went up $300.
Yeah, it just proves that like new stuff can get there. So buy new cards. They're never going to reprint Power because it's on the reserve list, but they can print Power level stuff and you'll have the ability to get it in a booster pack.
Yeah. I mean, and the people who are buying like $800 Jace doesn't really matter. Like $150 Jace, that matters if somebody wants to get in the Legacy. $800 Jaces, only foil Jaces, only matter to people who want to foil out their deck and can afford to do that. You know, like the, it is what it is. If people want those cards, they can afford to have those cards. You know, it's your typical player who wants to get into Legacy isn't like, I have to have foil Jaces.
I love everything about expensive Legacy foils of inexpensive cards. You know, I like a $40 foil Abrupt Decay when the non-foil is still accessible to people who want to play it in Standard, you know, at around $8 to $10. So, yeah, $150 non-foil Jace isn't super accessible, but it's better than the $800. I really like super expensive pimp foils that that you can still have the opportunity to get in collections or, you know, just get out of a booster pack even.
Every once in a while you pick up that casual collection and the person randomly has, you know, here's this $100 foil that they probably knew was worth nothing, but it's still cool to find those cards. And like foil 7th edition is like kind of the last thing where it's, you know, where that happened before you got into these competitive foils.
You guys, are we ready to move into spoilers? Like we actually, people probably want to hear about?
People don't want to hear about those. No.
I don't like spoilers. Somebody told me that Bruce Willis was dead at the end of Sixth Sense, and I was really mad.
Whoa.
Oh, you should burn in hell for that one.
Sorry.
That actually happened to me, too, when I was a kid.
No, actually, here's an actual story that's not related to Magic the Gathering at all, but real quick. The Comcast description for Usual Suspects says that Kevin Spacey plays Kaiser Soze in the movie. That is the Comcast description for the movie.
That's wrong.
Someone's real good at their job over at Comcast.
Oh, that's the good movie too. If anyone ruins, you know, people that ruin movies and you're spoiler ruiner, you just, you know, there's a special place for you.
Well, with, not like,
with that said, let's now ruin some cards for those of you who wanted to be surprised at the pre-release.
That was a seamless segue. You should
was a pretty solid segue.
You get the Marcel Award for best segue. All
right. So I guess since we talked about it last week, we've had obviously a fair amount more. Is there anything that immediately jumps out at you guys?
Yes.
Poop.
Go.
1, 2, 3.
Blood Baron of Viscopa.
I was going to say Voice of Resurgence, but everyone already knows that.
Oh
no!
Yeah,
Blood Baron of Viscopa reminds me of cards that EDH players are gonna like.
Wow, we just got new cards in the spoiler. I haven't even looked.
Okay, let's do this. Blood Baron, 3 colors, a white and a black. He's a vampire, so right there. He's a mythic, so right there. 4/4, lifelink, pro white, pro black. As long as you have 30 or more life and an opponent has 10 or less life, Blood Baron of Viscopa gets +6/+6 and has flying.
What do you like about him?
I just. The fact he's got lifelink, the fact that life totals matter, like the fact that he's, if you could get their life total to 10 in EDH fairly easily, like play something like Magister Sphinx or something hilarious like that, this guy could be a total monster. But just the fact that he can, you know, it just reminds me of stuff like, what is it? Divinity of Pride. Anything that has lifelink and is in those colors just moves really well to casual people. I think casual people are really going to like this card a lot. So, that's just, it struck me as something that it's going to go under the radar for a few years. And I think this is going to trade really well to people that don't necessarily play in tournaments, but I think even competitive EDH players might snap something like this. So this is the kind of card when you see a few key things, lifelink and pro colors being among them and anything that, you know, depends on life totals, just it, for whatever reason, it moves really well. Celestial Mantle, Divinity, stuff like that.
Okay. What about this card in Standard?
Not at all.
No?
I mean, I've heard somebody talk about that the fact that has protection from 2 different colors and a multicolor set means that only it could block basically 7 of the guilds. So there is some value in that.
I don't know. Like in a post-Thrag Tusk world, he's actually
solid
with those pro colors.
He's competing with Obsidat.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But at the same time,
anybody compete with Obsidat.
Yeah, but I mean, he can't compete with Obsidat, and his second abilities is basically if you're winning the game already, you win some.
Win the game a little more.
Yeah, that's pretty irrelevant. Yeah, it's the first. I mean, yeah, but that's really the question to me is like at 5 mana, do you play him over Obsidat in a post Thrag Tusk world? Like that's how you determine if he's good in Standard or not. I don't know. He's difficult to answer. On the other hand, if they do answer him, you get nothing out of him, whereas with Obsidat, you do. So I think depending on how that shakes out, you're looking at something that could be a mainstay of, you know, mid-ranger control decks a year from now.
I'm going to say something that's going to sound ridiculous right away, but I want you to bear with me. A lot of people didn't think much of Baneslayer Angel. Not saying this guy's Baneslayer Angel. I'm just saying that something with a high power and toughness and also lifelink can take games, you know, and pretty much put them out of reach. So I don't know if the pro white and pro black is going to be all that relevant. There's not a lot of spot damage based spot removal that can deal with them besides Mizzium Mortars, you know, all that easily, or, you know, a lucky bonfire. I just think that it's possible that if this guy is pretty tough to block, because a lot of white and black, or, you know, creatures with those colors in their color combination or in the format, this guy could be similar to Baneslayer. I don't know what the whole set's going to look like, so I can't say that. I'm just saying let's not dismiss this as not playable in standard, because nobody thought much of Baneslayer at first either. I heard a lot of people call that a bad achroma.
Well, you know what is playable in standard? Is Voice of Resurgence. This is a beast of a card right here. This is a 2/2 creature elemental for green and a white. And it has the text, whenever an opponent casts a spell during your turn, when Voice of Resurgence dies, put a green and white elemental token into the battlefield with this creature's power and toughness is equal to the number of creatures you control. So this is another FU to Sphinx's Revelations. This is another
counter spells,
Think Twice, Supreme Verdict even. Like, this gives you a creature after Supreme Verdict. It's still a 1/1 after that. There's a lot going on with this card, and it's aggressive, a 2/2 for 2. This card has a lot of potential. I think actually we're going to make this our token that we're going to do. So we're going to have, this is going to be a card in standard. This will be a card for quite some time, and you know, it's worthwhile. I'm excited about it. What do you guys think?
I kind of haven't made up my mind. Like, basically against those control decks, really, like, it's the Wrath that matters. You know, cause they'll just play their removal spell during their own turn. Like, it's very unlikely they're going to, you know, walk into it and give you a free dude. What it meant, and after you, a Wrath, you get a 1/1, which isn't, I certainly think it can be playable against the control decks for that, because, I mean, it is kind of relevant. It's, you know, a 2/2 after you play a creature or whatever. It kind of helps you reload. So you can play these end of Wraths, you know, and you're not really overextending. But I don't think it's just, you know, the most insane thing ever. I think it's good, but, you know, I'm not blown away by it.
I think, I don't know. I think it puts control off their game a little. Like, this in a vacuum may not shut them down, but this in part of your, you know, suite of creatures in your deck, yeah, I think gives you a lot of tools to make control not do what they want to do when they wanted to do it.
Play this with Smiter or even Strangle Root Geist, and all of a sudden you got, you know, a pretty resilient deck. You could even go with the Worm. You got the Avid of the Worm, and then you could play the protection, the root-bound defenses, and have, you know, all kind of protection against control. There's,
boy, you really like that Advent of the Worm, Marcel.
That's a card. I don't know.
I don't remember you being this excited about our Martyr Worm, which
I like the Martyr Worm.
This is good.
I like a Martyr Worm a lot better, actually. The Martyr Worm, because I'm a big Blink fan. Anything with Momentary Blink is my favorite card in Magic for a number of reasons. So Restoration Angel into a Martyr Worm was something I try to do for a long time. It's not. You can't do it in this standard. It's just not.
Okay, I'm gonna throw one out at you guys that has probably no bearing on standard, but I think is extremely worth talking about.
Oh, if you steal my card, Corbin.
Do it, Corbin. Do it.
I might. Savage Born Hydra.
Okay, yeah.
I like this card.
Okay, good. Well, here's the thing. It's a X red and green double strike. It enters the battlefield with X 1/1 counters on it. For one colorless and a red or a green hybrid mana there, you can put a 1/1 counter on it. Activate its ability in time, you could cast a sorcery. So I actually think, like, this could theoretically be playable in standard. Like, there's these Yeva decks, which give all your green creatures flash. And, like, if that's the thing and you flash it in at the end of their turn, then you can pump it, you know, after they tap out or something. Like, that's good.
But mostly, Hager's Revelation. I like it.
Yeah, mostly that's irrelevant to me. What matters to me is that it's a Hydra with counters, and it's a mythic one at that. Casual players love these things. Primordial Hydra is kind of the gold standard here.
Name a Hydra under $5.
Yeah. See, there you go. Like, I mean, it's $5 and it's the counters, and like this thing being mythic to me and from a third set just screams to me. I really hope this is not good in standard so that I can get them very cheap and just hold them for a couple years. And these Hydras get are very popular casually over time, and that's kind of why I want to mention it here, is people will undervalue these after the first couple of weeks if it's not played in standard. They'll just, you'll get them cheap, and, you know, they're just a good thing to stash away, and that's why I wanted to touch on it.
Yeah, I don't think it really has a role in standard. I mean, it's a very powerful card, and I would love to put a Rancor on this, but yeah, I think...
It dies to too many removal spells.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't want to put, like, any, you don't want to be sinking mana into it, and, like, for 5 mana, you get a 3/3 double strike, which is okay, but you could also just get, like, a Thrag Tusk. I mean, so it's unlikely to be great in standard, but, like, which is honestly better for, you know, the prospects of picking it up cheap.
Yeah, just to clarify, the whole dice to removal fallacy is usually a weak argument, but this is quite a mana sink. So I think you have to realize that they're just going to wait for you to sorcery speed, dump a few mana into it before you attack, and they're just going to, you know, Doomblade it or whatever. So I don't know that it'll be necessarily good in standard. I'd be fine with it if it were, though, obviously, because I like this kind of stuff. But this is another card, like something like Apocalypse Hydra was never, like, you can get those really cheap out of binders even still, and that's, you know, a solid 450 on cool stuff. And this is the same colors as that, so... I don't know. Maybe it goes in the same Hydra EDH deck.
Yeah, like Apocalypse Hydra is a mythic. You know, like that's exactly why this is so appealing to me.
It seems like a pretty good corollary to that. So yeah. This I don't know how exciting it is that this card's going to be 450 someday. But I mean, if it goes to bulk status pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, like,
if Moonveil Dragon suddenly became worth $5, that would be significant. So, yeah, I mean, this could end up a 50-cent mythic pretty fast.
Right, and it's not, I mean, obviously, like, you know, that 450 doesn't sound super exciting, but when you think about it, you're going to get these at 50 cents, maybe a dollar, and they're going to quadruple in 2 or 3 years. Like, you know, obviously you don't want to put a ton into this, but in terms of investments, that's pretty solid.
And they'll trade out at 5 really well pretty much the whole time.
It's true. Yeah. All right, so on to my card. I think Breaking and Entering... For two reasons. A, the casual appeal of mill, and obviously the EDH appeal of stealing out of people's graveyards, because it doesn't specify which one, but also because I think it may make modern mill playable, and from what I've been hearing from other people, I'm not the only one. Right now it is currently priced at $1.99, and I feel like that is extremely low.
That is something I honestly hadn't super considered, but it is a two-mana spell, and that deck is very solid.
Yeah, I mean, you already have 4 mil for 10s. Here you have 4 mil for 8s. You can run Surgical Extraction to take care of any Eldrazi problems.
You run Mind Funeral and all that.
Yeah, and I feel like it may really just be a deck.
Yeah, you may not even play Entering.
Well,
yeah. No, I think you're pretty much play this for Breaking.
That's honestly, I hadn't considered that at all. That is a very interesting, you know, argument there. I don't know if the mill's a deck, but if it gets to where it can kill people on turn 5, like...
I mean, I think it can kill quicker than that, even. I mean,
if you get someone with an Archive Trap or whatever, but, like, if it can consistently even turn 5, that's fast enough to be a deck.
Yeah.
For me, the best part about this card is when they printed Beck and Call, everyone on Twitter was talking about, oh, the new Glimpse. So I made a joke, like, haha, I thought they were going to reprint Glimpse the Unthinkable. Haha, they totally did. So anything named Glimpse apparently is going to get its own fuse card. So I don't know if there are any other Glimpse magic cards.
I'm sure there are.
That's not something I had considered before, but it's a good point. All right, anything else that you guys want to touch on? Any?
Well, there was one other card that I was actually thinking about as my pick of the day, but I really wanted to get that one out there. Let me find it here real quick. It is. The clone guy, I can't remember what his name is.
Clone guy.
Progenitor Mimic.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a mythic, which means that, you know, who knows what his price could be. But I think this card, like, maybe just casual appeal. I don't think you pick him up right away. I think he's pre-selling for something like $8 on a lot of websites. If you can find him down, like, I think he's going to drop eventually down to 2 or 3. But it's another one of those cards, like, over time, it's just going to do nothing but go up.
Yeah, I like that they made all these casual cards that, you know, I'm excited to just stock in the binder for a couple years at Mythic, because that just makes it so much better.
So what does it do? Read the card?
Oh, sorry. Progenitor Mimic is a creature shapeshifter. It costs 4, a blue, and a green. It's a Mythic. 0/0. You may have Progenitor Mimic enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it gains at the beginning of your upkeep if this creature isn't a token, put a token on the battlefield that's a copy of this creature. Meaning, if you play your first one, say you copy Restoration Angel, it's going to make a copy at the beginning of your upkeep, but that copy will never make copies. So
it's not pack rat. Right.
But the original will always make a copy each turn. So, I mean, when I first read it, I had to go back 2 or 3 times to make sure I was reading it correctly, so.
Pretty insane, especially in an EDH game with all the big creatures they got going on. And yeah,
this is one of those cards that I could see at some point seeing Fringe Standard play just because it fits into the right niche deck. I'm not saying that, you should go pick them up right away because they're going to be a standard bomb or anything like that, but it could certainly, because of the applications that it could have, it may see play.
All right, I've got another. I'm going to throw one more, another mythic incidentally at you guys here. And one that I think is probably strictly EDH. Maybe it makes its way to standard. That's Deadbridge Chant. It's a 4 colorless green and black enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, put the top 10 cards of your library into the graveyard. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose a card at random in your graveyard. If it's a creature, put it on the battlefield. Otherwise, put it in your hand. So it's a lot of value just in general, which maybe it finds a way to slot into Jund decks now or post-rotation or something, whatever. But this strikes me as a pretty big EDH card. Like, I immediately want to put this in my Reanimator EDH deck. Reanimator is a pretty popular EDH strategy, so I can't imagine that I'm alone in this.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan was talking with me about it. I didn't really like it at first, but he made the point that worst-case scenario, it's a Phyrexian Arena that doesn't hurt you. Because even if you're not getting what you wanted, you're still drawing an extra card every turn.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, like, at most, I think a 2 of, just because it costs 6 mana. But I'm.
You could do some insane stuff. I think you could do some crazy stuff.
It's worth a ton of value if you can find a way to squeeze it into the deck.
Yeah, and if you somehow could just remove cards from your graveyard and you could pinpoint and, Faithless Looting, put specific cards in your deck, there's a lot of build around with this and really... If you can make a deck that works with this, you can make some insane stuff. Craziness.
If you think about like the Jund Mirror or like the Jund on control matchup, like you both do stuff, whatever. You slam this, they have to answer it. You're going to be stocked the rest of the game, whether that's just getting stuff back in your hand or whether that's getting creatures straight onto the battlefield. Like this is it's just so much value, and it's a mythic again, which is why I think the upside on it is more exciting if it catches on. But either way. I think if it does go cheap, it's going to be an EDH staple in those type of decks.
Well, another card to be excited about is Varzol's the Scar Stripe. This is 1, a black and a green for 2/2 legendary troll. Yeah, this is Ryan's best friend or Ryan's best friend.
Yeah.
Each creature in your graveyard has scavenge. Scavenge cost is equal to their mana cost. Sacrifice another creature, regenerate Varzol's. The big trick about this guy is Death Shadows. If you don't know about, is it Death Shadow?
Yeah, yes. It's Death Shadow. Not only that, but it's also Phyrexian Dreadnought.
So yeah.
I channel the Godslayer here and it's a 13/13 for 1 mana.
Thank you.
Basically. So yeah, you cast it. It goes in your graveyard. You scavenge it on your infect creature. Instant win. Bam. There you go.
Bam.
I mean, personally, I'm not super excited about it and.
I'm sold.
Oh, well, if Corbin's not excited.
It takes so much work just to have it path or helix or what, like, it's just, you have to have it.
Are you telling me this card dies to removal?
No, but see,
dies to removal, forget it.
The problem is that it takes a lot of work to set up and then it dies to removal. You could just not have the pieces because it's, it takes a lot of work to get going and it doesn't matter.
It takes a lot of work to set up that specifically, but... you're dredging and stuff, you got other stuff in your graveyard you can scavenge also, like, it doesn't seem that bad.
But then aren't you just...
Like, if they kill him, he's cheap to replay another copy. In your graveyard has scavenge, not just those 2 cards.
You're just diluting your Vengevines deck at that point, like...
I mean, I see what you're saying. He has potential. I think if you got the Death Shadows now, I would sell him and get rid of your Death Shadows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think this is anything staying, but there may be a deck that randomly pops up in top 8s with it. I mean, the card certainly has potential.
Yeah,
really,
power's there.
It doesn't matter that the blue black Guildmage deck with Jace never went anywhere, or the white black Guildmage deck with Exquisite Blood
right.
never went. That was never a deck, and I still made a ton of money on Exquisite Blood.
Yeah, financially it doesn't matter.
So if you can make money off Phyrexian Dreadnought possibly going up, and Death Shadow definitely having gone up and possibly going up more, more power to you. Yes. I sell into the hype.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like I said, it, you know, if you're talking about a, like, you're obviously talking Modern for that combo, and you're talking graveyard green based strategies, it has to be better than Vengevine. And I don't think this is, and I don't really think it fits into your Vengevine deck.
Bloodghast isn't better than Vengevine, and that's in the deck.
Yeah, but that fits easily into the deck. Like, this does not, because Death Shadow doesn't really work with your deck, and this doesn't really work with Vengevine either. Like, it's just a card, you know, it's, but anyway, so that's my take on it. You know, maybe I'll be proven wrong. Financially, you know, hopefully you took advantage of it, get rid of the Death Shadows now, but competitively, I'm not impressed.
Speaking of being proven wrong, earlier you were wrong about this other card. Legion's That's, Initiative.
There's too many. There's too many to list.
Well, Legion's Initiative, this is a red and a white for an enchantment that has red creatures you control get +1/+0, white creatures you control get +0/+1. But the best part of it all for a red and a white, and you exile Legion's Initiative, colon, then you get the exile all creatures you control at the beginning of your next combat. Return those cards to the battlefield under their owner's control, and those creatures gain haste until end of turn.
Boom.
It's also a mythic, which means good things for its price going up.
I should call this Seal of Boros Charm. Although, before the cast, Corbin's kind of like, ah, it's just a bad Boros Charm. But really, when you think about it, It stuffs Mutilate and Terminus, which are both removal spells that are played right now, and they're removal spells that Boros Charm does not have any game against. So this is closer to a ghost way, but I like that it pumps your dudes. While it's so there's no benefit to sandbagging it. You want to play it out there and, you know, get that benefit on your creatures in combat.
Yeah, I had misread the card, and I think that the fact that it does do something while it's on the field and then also provides protection, when you calculate in that, you know, Mutilate and Terminus are played, probably gives it the edge over Boros Charm.
Corbin, don't say I misread the card. Say it was wrong on MTG Salvation. Ryan and I pulled that for Notion Thief, and we totally got away with it.
Yep. You got to learn how to do spoiler season correctly.
Yeah, well, I will refrain from admitting any fault of my own in the future.
As you should.
This is the Boros card that Aurelius Fury wants to be. This is actually going to be played.
You know, I think Aurelius Fury is actually a good pickup right now. As much as we talked shit about that card when it first came out, it's now $6. And although I don't think it's Sphinx's Revelation, we're losing Sphinx's Revelation.
I think it's even cheaper than that on cool stuff.
Is it?
The
Let's
card
check
is...
it out. If only there were a way to visually verify.
Well, speaking of Auroria, this card also works with Auroria.
Who's Auroria?
Oh, whatever. Auroria. Aurelia. Whatever the fuck.
Garmo's wife.
If you don't understand, I don't know how to pronounce these cards for jack shit. So
Aurelius Fury, 550 on cool stuff for reference.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad pickup. I mean, the card still does a lot.
Especially if you're like me and you've ground up a significant cool stuff ink discount, which I think is awesome.
Bam. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I mean, there's some other, like I said, there's some other cards. There's nothing to me that just, outside of Putrefy, that just immediately screams to me this is going to impact Standard. I mean, there's been talk about Sire of Insanity, which is the 6-mana red-black, 6/4 that at the beginning of each end step, each player discards his or her hand. Some people have talked about that.
That's actually a pretty good pairing with a mono-black creature they've spoiled too called Bloodscrivener.
Oh, yeah, that card's nice.
That's a 2/1/2. It said if you would draw a card while you have no cards in hand, it said draw two cards and lose a life. So that's pretty good if you've got a sort of grafted skullcap type effect that doesn't make you discard going on with the stuff that makes everybody piss your whole hand. You'll be the only one with a hand, and you'll be in top deck mode, doubly effective there.
I mean, I'm not sure which deck like wants both of these cards. Like maybe the best place, I guess, to play the 6/4 the demon. Whatever, Sire of Insanity, is maybe like a reanimator shell because you benefit the most from discarding your hand. And I mean, you can actually reanimate it. Like maybe that's where you play it. Or maybe you top out the curve in a Jund deck. I don't know. I have a difficult time seeing exactly where this goes right now, though, even if, though it's a very powerful effect.
It's powerful, but it seems dirtily and casually, too. Yeah. So I think this would be a lot of fun to play in EDH.
So what about object that's aid?
You know, that's one of those cards where I go back and forth. I'm like, that's kind of a powerful effect. And I'm like, you know what? Come back when your debtors know.
Yeah.
So or, I really can't decide what I feel.
What does the card do?
This is a three for a white and a... Okay, thank you, Jason. this is three for a white and a...
Welcome, Marcel.
You know what? Just go die, Jason. Just get out of here.
Wow.
BRB, dying.
It's funny because it's not me.
What the fuck? Am I Corbin now? Yeah. What's going on?
Why don't you just do the Georgie Tate and just quit Twitter? Get out of here.
Wow.
The world would be a better place without you.
You've been spending way too much time with Chris Lansdell if you're trying to make people quit Twitter now just by telling.
Been hanging out with Maschioli?
Oh, that's all the right. Guy who needs to quit. Man,
read the card. Read the card.
Okay. This is Abzadad's aid. This is three and a white and a black for a sorcerer.
You're doing a good job, Marcel.
All-star performance here. And fuck you, Jason.
Is that the episode title? You guys did Shut Up Corbin. Is that the next episode title right there?
Yeah, I don't think we'll get past the...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Hey, Shut Up Corbin. Shut Everyone up likes Corbin.
Fuck you or two different...
Read the card.
Oh, man. We get sidetracked again. This reminds me of Heavy Meta that I just did. Oh, man. Talk about getting sidetracked. But anyway, so return target permanent card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So this is, you know, Burial Rites is obviously a much better card when it's in play and these got the same colors, but when that rotates, this is another graveyard thing for your creatures, but on top of that, it could take care of your planeswalkers and bring them back into play.
Along with your lands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it gives you a lot of options, so I think...
Take that, Ghost Quarter.
I guess... Like, the big difference between this and Unburial Rites is that Unburial Rites is good even when you mill it, so it, like, obviously fits in your mill deck. This is, just feels more like a value card to me to get back a big Planeswalker or something.
Yeah, the mill decks. Is there a mill deck? What mill deck is there in Standard?
I think he meant, like, kind of the dredgier type decks, like, you're playing the Grizzly Salvage mulch type shell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm completely...
It's not really... It's dredgier than it is milly.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think this is super powerful, but I definitely think, I mean, it's going to be an expensive card or anything, but I do think it's a powerful effect and that there is some room for this, especially when a Burial Rites leave and people, you know, want to reanimate stuff. There's
still a lot of big stuff to reanimate, so.
So, my homework for the listeners is, as I've gotten better at the whole finance thing, I've really reconceptualized my thinking. So instead of the obvious, like, well, this card's going to be powerful, I think if it's obvious to everybody that the card's going to be good, then there's not going to be much financial opportunity unless you pre-order from someone who made a mistake. Where there is opportunity is seeing what cards already exist and are cheap that a new spoiled card could make worth a lot of money. So if you look at something like Obsidat's Aid, Obsidat's Aid is going to be worth whatever it's going to be worth. But if there's something that was not as playable before, or this will make a lot better, that's one of the kind of cards where you want to kind of look and just see if there's any financial opportunity in something that's cheap and unplayable. And this, you know, could be just another reanimator spell, or it could be a way to really benefit from maybe using Snapcaster to get back something huge that's in your graveyard. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, so does that, does that kind of cover everything big for the week here, do we think? Anything else you guys want to talk
about? Well, I mean, we'll have all next week to talk about spoilers, too, and we have the full spoiler. So right, there may be some things that we see between now and then that change your mind about.
I'd actually like some feedback from our listeners, because last time we sort of played the bulk or not bulk game, and I think a lot of people, myself included, in hindsight, thought that there wasn't much merit to that, because the four of us correctly called Boros Reckoner not bulk. So I hope you went... Yeah, actually, you did.
I failed.
The three of us called it not bulk, so I hope you went super deep when we said it was not bulk, just like we said everything else is not bulk. So I think we're going to, if you would like us to do something different, maybe a price range, maybe something like they do with the playability on a scale of 1 to 5, maybe, how deep we think you should go, give us some feedback. Send us an email, to one of our accounts or to Marcel. What's the Brainstorm Brewery?
Brainstormbrew@gmail.com, not brewery, just brew.
Brainstormbrew@gmail. So, yeah, give us some feedback on what you'd like us to do for when we do the full spoiler episode.
Yeah, do it ASAP because we record on Monday, and you'll probably be listening to this on Friday, and that gives you a small window. Oh, speaking of submissions, do you guys want to talk about your submission for the You Make the Card? Did you guys come up with anything?
I did.
I've got one.
That will top it. Please let us know.
Go ahead, Jason.
Oh, okay.
Well, hold up. We'll first explain. This is the black enchantment that that was voted upon by Wizards. This is You Make the Card. So if you haven't been following along, go to the Wizards website and they have an article where you could actually, the community builds the card and picks a card. And it's been through a couple of votes. It got to black and it got to an enchantment and now it's a world enchantment and now people are now going to be submitting rules text for the card, and they're going to pick the best picks, and then they're going to have people vote on these picks, and this will be an actual card. So we all came up with our own submission. This is what we're going to submit. So yeah, start with Jason.
Enchant world as in like enchant world? Not aura?
Not aura. The enchant world was how it used to be. That's what an enchantment was before, when it was like alpha, beta, and all that good stuff.
That's kind of what I thought. It's a global enchantment then, I guess, is the just enchantment.
Yeah, sure. Global champion. Exactly.
Yeah, okay. So, good. I made the right thing. Mine, I don't know what I want to call it, but that's fine. I think it probably wanted to cost either a colorless and a black or two black. Sacrifice a creature to have an opponent lose one life. If the sacrificed creature was a zombie, you may gain one life.
Oh, Sam Black card.
Yeah, it seems kind of narrow. This is obviously something that I feel like the Zombardment deck needs in Modern, because Bombardment is just so nuts right now, but I think this is, you know, obviously has applications in Limited. Something like, I didn't think Viscera Seer was that great in Limited before, but really, your stuff's going to die. They're going to play removal spells. Your creatures are going to smash into each other. So your stuff's going to die anyway. This is a good sack out, just a way to get value out of a dead creature in Limited. And I think it's a combo enabler that's not degenerate, but it gives you a little bit of reach in something like Zombardment. And it's a nice pairing with a Blood Artist out there. So this is just a pet card of mine, but I thought this could be good in all formats, and it's something as soon as I heard it was a black enchantment, I envisioned something like this.
So what would you cost it at? One in a black?
One in a black, I think that's fair. I don't think you'd want to pay more than that. I could see maybe two colors in a black, but I think any more than that and it would be unplayable.
Okay, I think that's definitely a card, and I've seen something very similar to that on Twitter, but yeah, I would like to see that. It's definitely a choice to vote on.
All right. Yeah, I'll throw mine out there. This may be some sort of card I'm not aware of, but it just seemed pretty simple to me, and I just named it like Rat Invasion, you know, like 5-mana enchantment or 6-mana enchantment. Just at the beginning of your upkeep, put a rat token into play that has the text, this creature's power and toughness are equal to the number of rats you control. Seems to me like a very simple EDH card that, you know, builds along with the rat theme that is pretty popular in black, so it obviously immediately fits into a bunch of EDH rat decks. Just seemed like a pretty simple card to me, that I don't think exists. I could be wrong. So that's kind of what I came up with.
I like that. That's clean. It's, not a whole lot like text going on, but it does a lot and it's powerful and it's like a, you know, like an assembled legion, but with rats and scaling rats. Nice.
Yep. The one I came up with, I don't really know on the cost. It'd have to be 4 or 5, probably like 2 and 2 black or 3 and 2 black. Whenever a creature comes into play, put a -1/-1 counter on that creature and, you draw a card or something like that. Like, I think it might even have to cost 5 or 6, but I think it's a good way for like control to deal with a lot of these, like swarm decks and prevent them, more of like a sideboard answer, I guess, to any kind of like token decks in Modern, but it might be a little too expensive. And I was thinking if there was some other effect to do off of draw a card, like, but instead of that, to make it cheaper, like potentially gain 2 life or something like that instead. But I mean, there's plenty of like, Knight of All Souls betrayal effects out there, but there's nothing that really gives it a -1/-1 when it comes into play or anything like that.
Hmm. Could this get, broken with, what was it? It's the stuff from Shadowmoor where the creature died and came back
persist.
To the counter. Persist.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Well, cause this would also count.
Yeah, you did have a sacrifice outlet too, though.
No.
So I mean, and I there's already effects not, no, like that.
Because if the creature came dies without a 1/1 counter or minus one counter, come back.
Right. This
so
would
this
work
would be
with
busted
the
with the new one. Yeah.
With undying. Yeah.
With like undying. Sure.
Guys dies. You comes in. It comes back into play. You put the trigger on. You stack your triggers the right way so it'll die again. And I mean, it just would loop itself indefinitely.
We'll do it.
Well, you would have to have a sacrifice outlet still.
Like my card.
Yeah, you want it. Well, if it gets a minus one counter, then no, you want it.
It would come back with a +1/+1 counter too, so that it would cancel out.
You stack your triggers, right?
Yeah, but then it just comes back. But it's not like you're doing an infinite loop. You need to have a sacrifice. But
so it doesn't. You can't stack the undying trigger so that it.
Because undying makes it come in with a +1/+1, and then this would go on.
You're right.
And so, I mean, it's no more busted than there's a lot of 3-card combos out there like that right now.
Yeah.
That you can already do with persist, like Kitchen Finks and stuff like that. So I don't think it makes it broken. It's just what your effect would be. Like drawing a card seems not really black anyway, unless it was like you lose 2 life and draw a card, or you may lose 2 life and draw a card. I don't know. But then you're getting a little complicated. It's probably better like just to gain 2 life or something like that. It's like you're sucking the life off of that creature.
You could also make it just affect just your opponent's creatures, and then that way it doesn't give you a chance to combo off of it.
I think that's quite good if you're making their creatures smaller and you're drawing and getting life out of it. I don't know.
Isn't that the point of it?
Yeah, I think if there were a smaller effect, if it's going to be, lateral.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it would just be just fine and just quite good, but not busted. If it were just your opponent's creatures, like they got a -1/-1 counter and you gained 2 life or drew a card or something like that. Maybe it would just be good and not too good.
So the card that I came up with is very similar. It's going to be a black enchantment called Consuming Plague. I figure 2 colorless and 2 black. So basically, simple card at the beginning of your end step, put a +1, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature on the battlefield. So basically like a, nice soul betrayal, but that constantly builds and stacks on creatures on the battlefield. And, I just think it'd be a nice little way to give control and added bonus to take care of creatures and definitely take care of token creatures as well.
Cool. Thanks. I mean, obviously, we'll see what happens. I know a lot of people want it to be some sort of, necropotence, I don't know how to say it, type effect, just, for the history of the black enchantment.
Possibly, because that's, like, the only black enchantment that anybody's really liked.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, like, the No Mercy, which I believe was 2 colorless and 2 black. When a creature deals damage, you destroy it. Like that, I guess, would be like a pretty staple black effect. But
yeah, Subversion's pretty good too. I mean, I suppose we could name, quite a few black enchantments that were good, but I don't know. I was Team Land from the beginning, so
I would have also liked that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, I don't understand how enchantment won out, but
black enchantment seems like so random.
Yeah, I think
people are really challenging them to come up with a good one, because like you said, Necro's like the only thing. Maybe that's just what it is. Everybody wants to see something that's good, so if we put it in the hands of the players, they don't want to disappoint.
Magic is the hands of casual players. That's basically what it means.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Apparently
they like black enchantments.
Well, who doesn't?
Well, who doesn't is What's It Worth, because we're not going to be doing What's It Worth this week.
It's true.
Wow, it's Marcel.
That was a great segue into
to nothing.
People might not have even noticed, but you're like, no, we will talk about how we're not doing it.
Well, we're not.
Threw What's It Worth right in its face.
Time issues this week with all the spoilers. We're gonna go ahead and cut it for the week. So don't worry, guys, it'll be back.
Don't lie, it's because Corbin's mic didn't work for the first 2 hours.
Yes.
I thought we decided that wasn't my fault. In fact,
that was your fault.
Those were the best 2 hours of the podcast.
Like every first 2 hours. Oh,
that's why. Yeah. That's why when I said at the beginning his story was even better, it's because I'd heard it like 4 times while we tried to start the podcast.
Oh man, don't understand. Every time we record, like literally, it's an hour. No matter what time we say we're going to start, if we're going to say we're going to start right away, it's usually about an hour before we start recording, and all the good stuff gets lost in there. It's not like with Heavy Med. I want to give a shout out since we don't really do this.
Stop with the podcast you're cheating on us with. Seriously,
no. This.
That's the second time you've mentioned them. We get it.
No, I had a great time. I'm going to tell
you. Leave us for that podcast. We get it.
Well, I'm not going to leave you guys, but all the listeners, check out Heavy Meta episode 24. If you guys haven't heard, it's a really good podcast, but it was a 3-hour podcast.
Oh my God.
See, we do 3-hour podcasts, but we only record an hour of it.
Right.
So.
Well, we record three hours of it. Just that's not available for the public.
Nobody's commute is that long.
Oh, yeah, man. Sure. Well, if you want to hear me go into a spiral into drunkenness, and oh, man, do I sound stupid by
then
that?
Join us in Vegas.
I hope you spend 5 minutes on there talking about Brainstorm Brewery.
I did mention you guys. I talked about you, Jason, and how you became a new member of the cast, and you just fit right in, and now we were like, how the hell did you get here? And then all of a sudden, like, well, we can't have a cast without you. So.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, Marcel.
And then
but I'm still going to give you shit.
And then I want to give a shout out to Georgie Tate. Thank you for leaving Twitter. Made my day.
Oh, man.
Marcel, you really got something out for this guy.
Wow.
Oh, he's a toxic personality along with Deeple Sticks. If you want to hear more about it, you can listen to Heavy Meta or Public Enemy.
Wait, did you say Deeple Sticks?
It is Die Please Thanks. That is what his name is.
No, Deeple Sticks.
I thought it was Deeple Sticks for like 6 months.
Yeah, me too. And then also Die Please Thanks or whatever. Well, he's a toxic personality. I'm not going to just get on the soapbox again about this guy, but yeah. That's all.
All right. So,
no punches.
I have, before we go, I have one thing left to say, and it's probably the most important thing I'm going to say on the cast. You guys may have thought that I forgot or that I didn't notice, but I did. And I'm here to tell you that Merfolk top-aided the GP.
Oh, God.
It did.
I wrote about it in my stupid article. I gave you an entire paragraph.
Crap. But you know what? There's no more merfolk in Dragon's Maze, so take that.
There are?
Hashtag one merfolk.
One merfolk.
Wow. How can you get worse? That should be the next opener to our cast. How can you get worse than Dragon or than Gatecrash?
No, there's going to be a blue creature, 2 blue mana for a 2/2. All fish mutants get +1/+1.
All cards that shamble.
You didn't buff, Ryan.
All Marfolk. They'll spell Marfolk with an A. It's like, sorry, it doesn't burst your curse catcher. That's a Merfolk.
Actually, it'll probably be is all blue creatures without the creature type Merfolk get +1/+1 to
limit. I just wanted this cannot be played.
I'm not even gonna, I just wanted to make a mention of it because I wouldn't be me if I didn't.
That is true. Why don't you read the quote from Oklahoma? If now you want to speak about
Oklahoma, gosh.
Who you are.
Guys, give me a second to go find this.
What's it worth for this?
Yeah.
Well, this is a good story, I guess. Okay, so last night, Monday night in Oklahoma, we had an earthquake. It was about 2:30 in the morning. I was sitting just, watching TV or whatever, and I noticed the walls start shaking, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm actually awake for this earthquake this time. So I was like, that's cool, whatever. Anyways, well, there ended up being like 5 or 6, earthquakes between the aftershocks and all of that stuff. So I guess it started trending on Twitter, this is what I thought the earthquake was, or, I thought it was this. And this was a quote sent into a TV station that I think describes Oklahoma pretty well. This is Amy who sent her thoughts in. She thought the earthquake was this. She says, I thought it was our neighbor's donkey who had escaped from his pen and was scratching himself on the trailer.
Quote, unquote.
What's this? Yeah, that
Eyewitness News? Okay, preps, Eyewitness News?
Yeah, that happened. I live here.
So you guys got blizzards? Purpose. You guys got blizzards, you got tornadoes, and you got earthquakes.
Sometimes we have...
Your state sucks.
Sometimes we have tornado quakes. Wow. Like last year, we had actual, like, there were tornadoes while we had an earthquake. It was tornado quake season.
What about blizznados?
2 green mana, 1 red.
Destroy target.
Destroy
Oklahoma.
Target permanent and deal X damage to each creature target player controls. Where X is that sacrifice permanence converted mana cost. Boom. Tornado quake.
Thanks.
Jason, you're next to go to Wizards. You're the next podcast.
I'm going to win the Great Design Search.
Just make cards to troll Oklahoma and see how good they are.
That would be me on the Great Design Search. I'm procrastinating and like my shit's due in half an hour. I'm just making cards out of stuff on my desk.
I'm going to make a card. Pencil. This card's called Abrupt Decay. Green and a black.
Beer bottle gnomes. This is good. Pen golem. Sleeves wizard. This is easy.
Use dildo.
Talk about things at Jason's desk. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, it really
aren't all
like...
dildos used dildos, and all unless right. they're like factory sealed, still in the package.
Well, derailing the podcast.
Quickly. Yeah, we've really taken the monkey out of the sleeve on this one.
That was really good.
I really hope good. Xander Vanderzee tells us what the hell that means, because I'm not even going to venture a guess.
We're going to do this. We're taking 2 minutes and we're ending this cast, but I want to see if we can figure out what the heck these mean.
Take the monkey out of the sleeve?
Yeah, that sounds very dirty.
That sounds
yeah.
like not wearing a condom to me. I'd...
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, full on.
I think it just means like the jig is up, like the same kind of thing as that. But
the cat's out of the bag, but
yeah.
They don't have sense. Cats in
the can of
Netherlands. They only have monkeys.
The monkey is out of the sleeve. I mean,
now the monkey comes out of the sleeve. Yeah.
So if you guys don't know, if the listeners don't know, this is someone that sent in the email and he's talking about the soup in the finger in the soup. Which basically yeah. means having an influence on things. And this is idioms from, where is he at? I'm sorry.
Dutchland.
Dutchland?
Dutchland.
He's from the Netherlands.
Trying to find this email. Does anyone else have it?
Yeah, I've got it. I've got to pull it
okay.
up.
Okay. Yeah, pull it up.
We've got, that was a hard one, he said, was now the monkey comes out of the sleeve. Another one, the easy one, he says, the apple does not fall far from the tree, which I think is pretty common here too.
Yeah, we use that one.
Right. But here's one we don't use. He did say it was hard, and that is finding the dog in the pot. Mm. I don't know what that means.
My dog got into my pot. And,
I was going to say.
He ate a whole bag of food.
Marcel, how do we feel about the dog in the pot?
Oh, he will be outside for a week with no food if he's in my pot. Will.
Finding the dog, maybe finding the silver lining or the bright side of things.
Man, Jason, if I find your dog in the pot, I'm gonna skin him.
God. Well, I had to take my dog to the vet actually for getting in the pot a few times.
Somebody's gonna call PETA. Somebody's calling PETA, I swear.
It was his fault. He ate the doobie. I had it on the ground.
He had it coming. Oh, we can only assume that that's exactly what that means. That's not an idiom at all. That was actually just literal.
Your dog ate your pot.
In my mind, I just had an image in my head of the dog like digging up your plants in the pot. I apparently have a different image in my head than you guys.
You think differently because donkeys routinely scratch themselves against your trailer.
All right, well, we're out of here.
More degeneration next week.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.